because she didn't look at me at all. After fidgeting a few minutes, she rose and went to the kitchen and opened a cabinet. She stared for 30 seconds and then got a bowl and hard bread to put in it, and water to pour over it, and then stood staring, waiting for it to soften, saying nothing, looking at no one. Chapter 8. At first, the people I had sent away from the Four Temple Water stood whispering in small groups on the street, and then dispersed when I approached, walking my regular rounds. But soon after, everyone disappeared into their houses, clustered together within. For the next few hours, the upper city was quiet. Eerily so, and it didn't help that Lieutenant On continually asked me what was happening there. Lieutenant On was sure increasing my presence in the upper city would only make the situation worse, so instead she ordered me to stay close to the plaza. If anything happened, I would be there, between the upper and lower city. It was largely because of this that when things went to pieces, I was still able to function more or less effectively. For hours, nothing happened. The Lord of the Roch mouthed prayers along with the priests of Ikt. In the lower city, I passed the word that it might be a good idea to stay in tonight. And as a result, there were no conversations in the streets, no knots of neighbors congregating on someone's ground floor to watch an entertainment. By dark, nearly everyone had retired to an upper floor and was talking quietly, or looking out over the railing, saying nothing. 4 hours before dawn, things went to pieces. Or more accurately, I went to pieces. The tracker data I had been monitoring cut out, and suddenly all 20 of me were blind, deaf, immobile. Each segment could see only from a single pair of eyes, hear only through a single pair of ears, move only that single body. It took a few bewildered, panicked moments for my segments to realize that each was cut off from the others, each instance of me alone in a single body. Worst of all, in that same instant, all data from Lieutenant On ceased. From that moment, I was 20 different people with 20 different sets of observations and memories, and I can only remember what happened by piecing those separate experiences together. At the moment the blow fell, all 20 segments immediately, without thought, extended my armor. Those segments that were dressed, not making even the least attempt to modify it to cover any part of my uniforms. In the house, 8 sleeping segments woke instantly, and once I had recovered my composure, they rushed to where Lieutenant On lay trying to sleep. 2 of those segments, 17 and 4, seeing Lieutenant On seemingly well, and several other segments around her, went to the house console to check communication status. The console wasn't working. "Communications are out," my 17 segment called, voice distorted by the smooth silver armor. "Not possible," said 4, and 17 didn't answer because no answer was necessary given the actuality. Some of my segments in the upper city actually turned toward the Four Temple Water before realizing I'd best stay where I was. Every single segment in the plaza and the temple turned toward the house. One of me took off running to be sure of Lieutenant On, and 2 said at once, "The upper city," and another 2, "The storm siren." And for 2 confused seconds, the pieces of me tried to decide what to do next. Segment 9 ran into the temple residence and woke the priest sleeping by the storm siren, who tripped it. Just before the siren blew, Jen Shinnan ran out of her house in the upper city shouting, "Murder! Murder!" Lights came on in the houses around her, but further noise was drowned out by the shrieking of the siren. My nearest segment was 4 streets away. All around the lower city, storm shutters rattled down. The priests in the temple ceased their prayers, and the head priest looked at me. But I had no information for her and gestured my helplessness. My communications are cut off, divine, said that segment. The head priest blinked, uncomprehendingly. Speech was useless while the siren blew. The Lord of the Roch hadn't reacted at the moment I had fragmented, though she was connected to the rest of herself in much the same way I ordinarily was. Her apparent lack of surprise was strange enough for my segment nearest her to notice it. But it might have been no more than self-possession. The siren elicited no more than an upward glance and a raised eyebrow. Then she stood and walked out onto the plaza. It was the third worst thing that has ever happened to me. I had lost all sense of justice of Torin overhead, all sense of myself. I had shattered into 20 fragments that could barely communicate with each other. Just before the siren had blown, Lieutenant On had sent a segment to the temple with orders to sound the alarm. Now that segment came running into the plaza, where it stood hesitating, looking at the rest of itself, visible but not there as far as my sense of myself was concerned. The siren stopped. The lower city was silent. The only sound was my footsteps and my armor-filtered voices trying to talk to myself, to get organized so I could function at least in some small way. The Lord of the Roch raised one graying eyebrow.
Where is Lieutenant On?
That was, of course, the question uppermost in the minds of all my segments that didn't already know. But now the one of me who had arrived with the order from Lieutenant On had something it knew it could do. Lieutenant On is on her way, my lord, it said. And 10 seconds later, Lieutenant On and most of the rest of me that had been in the house arrived, rushing into the plaza.
I thought you had this area under control.
Anander, me and I didn't look at Lieutenant On as she spoke. But the direction of her words was clear.
So did I.
And then Lieutenant On remembered where she was and to whom she was speaking.
My lord, begging your pardon.
Each of me had to restrain itself from turning entirely to watch Lieutenant On, to be sure she was really there, because I couldn't sense her otherwise. A few whispers sorted out which of my segments would keep close to her, and the rest would have to trust that. My 10 segment came around the Four Temple Water at a dead run. Trouble in the upper city, it called, and came to a halt in front of Lieutenant On, where I cleared the path for myself. People are gathering at Jen Shinnan's house. They're angry. They're talking about murder and getting justice.
Murder? Oh, fuck.
All the segments near Lieutenant On said in unison, Language, Lieutenant. Anander, me and I turned a disbelieving look on me, but said nothing.
Oh, fuck, Lieutenant On repeated.
Are you, asked Anander, me and I, calm and deliberate, going to do anything except swear?
Lieutenant On froze for half a second, then looked around, across the water toward the lower city at the temple.
Who's here? Count.
And when we had done so, 1 through 7 out here, the rest with me. I followed her into the temple, leaving Anander, me and I standing in the plaza. The priests stood near the dais, watching us approach.
Divine, said Lieutenant On.
Lieutenant, said the head priest.
There's a mob bent on violence headed here from the upper city. I'm guessing we have 5 minutes. They can't do much damage with the storm shutters down. I'd like to bring them in here. Keep them from doing anything drastic.
Bring them in here?
The head priest repeated doubtfully.
Everything else is dark and shut. The big doors are open. It's the most obvious place to come. When most of them are in here, we close the doors, and one esk surrounds them. We could just shut the temple doors and let them try their luck with the shutters on the houses, but I don't really want to find out how hard those are to breach. If, she added, seeing Anander Mianai come into the temple walking slowly, as though nothing unusual were happening, my lord permits. The lord of the Roch gestured a silent assent. The head priest clearly didn't like the suggestion, but she agreed. By now, my segments on the plaza were seeing hand lights sporadically visible in the nearest upper city streets. Within moments, Lieutenant On had me behind the large temple doors, ready to close them on her signal, and a few of me dispatched to the streets around the plaza to help herd Tanmind toward the temple. The rest of me stood in the shadows around the perimeter inside the temple itself, and the priests returned to their prayers, their backs to the wide and inviting entrance. More than 100 Tanmind came down from the upper city. Most of them did precisely as we wished and rushed in a swirling, shouting mass into the temple, except for 23, a dozen of whom veered off down a dark, empty avenue. The other 11, who had already been trailing the larger group, saw one segment of me standing quiet nearby and thought better of their actions. They stopped, muttered among themselves for a moment, watching the mass of Tanmind run into the temple, the others rushing, shouting down the street. They watched me close the temple doors, the segments posted there not uniformed, covered only with the silver of my own generated armor, and maybe it reminded them of the annexation. Several of them swore, and they turned and ran back to the upper city. 83 Tanmind had run into the temple. Their angry voices echoed and re-echoed, magnified. At the sound of the doors slamming closed, they turned and tried to rush back the way they had come. But I had surrounded them, my guns drawn and aimed at whoever was nearest each segment. "Citizens!" shouted Lieutenant On, but she didn't have the trick of making herself heard. "Citizens!" the various fragments of me shouted, my own voices echoing and then dying down. Along with the Tanmin's tumult, Jen Shinnen and Jen Ta, and a few others I knew were friends or relations of theirs, shushed those near them, urged them to calm themselves, to consider that the Lord of the Roch herself was here, and they could speak directly to her. "Citizens," Lieutenant On shouted again. "Have you lost your minds? What are you doing?"
"Murder,"
shouted Jen Shinnen, who was at the front of the crowd, shouting over my head at Lieutenant On where she stood behind me, beside the Lord of the Roch and the Divine. The junior priests stood huddled together, seemingly frozen. The Tanmin voices grumbled, echoing in support of Jen Shinnen.
"We won't get justice from you, so we'll take it ourselves," Jen Shinnen cried.
The grumbling from the crowd rolled around the stone walls of the temple.
"Explain yourself, citizen," said Anander Mianai, voice pitched to sound above the noise. The Tanmin hushed each other for 5 seconds and then,
"My lord," said Jen Shinnen.
Her respectful tone sounded almost sincere.
"My young niece has been staying in my house for the past week. She was harassed and threatened by Orzians when she came to the lower city, which I reported to Lieutenant On, but nothing was done. This evening, I found her room empty, the window broken, blood everywhere. What am I to conclude? The Orzians have always resented us. Now they mean to kill us all. Is it any wonder we should defend ourselves?"
Anander Mianai turned to Lieutenant On.
"Was this reported?"
"It was, my lord," said Lieutenant On. "I investigated and found that the young person in question had never left sight of Justice of Torin I-esque, who reported that she had spent all her time in the lower city alone. The only words that passed between her and anyone else were routine business transactions. She wasn't harassed or threatened at any time.
You see? Cried Jen Shinnen. You see why we are compelled to take justice into our own hands?
And what leads you to believe all your lives are threatened? Asked Anander Mianai.
My lord, said Jen Shinnen, Lieutenant An would have you believe everyone in the lower city is loyal and law-abiding. But we know from experience that the Orzeans are anything but paragons of virtue. The fishermen go out on the water at night unseen. Sources.
She hesitated just a moment, whether because of the gun pointed directly at her, or Anander Mianai's continued impassivity, or something else. I couldn't tell. But it seemed to me something had amused her. Then she recovered her composure.
Sources I prefer not to name have seen the boatmen of the lower city depositing weapons in caches in the lake. What would those be for, except to finally take their revenge on us? Who they believe have mistreated them? And how could those guns have come here without Lieutenant An's collusion?
Anander Mianai turned her dark face toward Lieutenant An and raised one great eyebrow.
Do you have an answer for that, Lieutenant An?
Something about the question, or the way it was asked, troubled all the segments that heard it. And Jen Shinnen actually smiled. She had expected the Lord of the Roch to turn on Lieutenant An, and was pleased by it.
I do have an answer, my lord, said Lieutenant An. Some nights ago, a local fisherman reported to me that she had found a cache of weapons under the lake. I removed them and took them to my house, and upon searching, discovered two more caches which I also removed. I had intended to search further this evening, but events have, as you see, prevented me. My report is written but not yet sent because I, too, wondered how the guns could have come here without my knowledge. Perhaps it was only because of Jen Shinnen's smile and the oddly accusatory questions from Anander Mianai and the slight earlier in the temple plaza, but in the charged air of the temple, the echoes of Lieutenant An's words themselves felt like an accusation. I have also wondered, Lieutenant An said, in the silence after those echoes died away, why the young person in question would falsely accuse residents of the lower city of harassing her, when they assuredly did not. I'm quite certain no one from the lower city has harmed her. Someone has, shouted a voice in the crowd, and mutterings of assent started and grew and echoed around the vast stone space.
What time did you last see your cousin? Asked Lieutenant An.
3 hours ago, said Jen Shinnen. She told us good night and went to her room.
Lieutenant An addressed the segment of me that was nearest her. One esk, did anyone cross from the lower city to the upper in the last 3 hours? The segment that answered, 13, knew I should be careful about my answer, which by necessity everyone would hear. No, no one crossed in either direction, though I can't be certain about the last 15 minutes.
Someone might have come earlier, Jen Shinnen pointed out.
In that case, answered Lieutenant An, they're still in the upper city, and you ought to be looking for them there.
The guns, Jen Shinnen began,
are no danger to you. They're locked under the top floor of my house, and one esk has disabled most of them by now. Jen Shinnen cast an odd, appealing look to Anander Mianai, who had stood silent and impassive through this exchange.
But...
Lieutenant An, said the Lord of the Roch, a word.
She gestured aside, and Lieutenant An followed her to a spot 15 meters off. One of my segments followed, which me and I ignored.
Lieutenant, she said in a quiet voice, tell me what you think is happening.
Lieutenant An swallowed, took a breath.
My lord, I'm certain no one from the lower city has harmed the young person in question. I'm also certain the guns were not cached by anyone from the lower city, and the weapons were all ones which had been confiscated during the annexation. This can only originate from a very high level. That's why I haven't filed the report. I was hoping to speak directly to you about this when you arrived, but never had the opportunity.
You were afraid if you reported it through regular channels, whoever did this would realize their plan had been detected and cover their tracks.
Yes, my lord. When I heard you were coming, my lord, I planned to speak to you about it immediately.
Justice of Torin?
The Lord of the Roch addressed my segment without looking at me.
Is this true?
Entirely, my lord, I answered. The junior priests still huddled, the head priest standing apart from them, looking at Lieutenant On and the Lord of the Roch where they conferred, an expression on her face that I couldn't read.
So, said Anandermia and I, what's your assessment of this situation?
Lieutenant On blinked in astonishment. It looks very much to me as though Jen Shinnen is involved with the weapons. How would she have known of their existence otherwise?
And this murdered young person?
If she is murdered, no one from the lower city did it. But can they have killed her themselves to have an excuse to... Lieutenant On stopped, appalled.
An excuse to come down to the lower city and murder innocent citizens in their beds, and then use the existence of the weapons caches to support their assertion that they were only acting in self-defense and you had refused to do your duty and protect them.
She cast a glance at the Tan Min, ringed by my still-armed and silver-armored segments.
Well, we can concern ourselves with details later. Right now, we need to deal with these people.
My lord, acknowledged Lieutenant On with a slight bow.
Shoot them.
To non-citizens, who only see Rajchai in melodramatic entertainments, who know nothing of the Roch besides ancillaries and annexations and what they think of as brainwashing, such an order might be appalling, but hardly surprising. But the idea of shooting citizens was, in fact, extremely shocking and upsetting. What, after all, was the point of civilization, if not the well-being of citizens? And these people were citizens now. Lieutenant On froze for 2 seconds. My lord? Anander Mianai's voice, which had been dispassionate, perhaps slightly stern, turned chill and severe.
Are you refusing an order, Lieutenant?
No, my lord, only they're citizens, and we're in a temple, and we have them under control, and I've sent Justice of Torin 1-esque to the next division to ask for reinforcements. Justice of Entei's 7 Issa should be here in an hour, perhaps 2, and we can arrest the Tan Min and assign them to re-education very easily since you're here.
Are you? Asked Anandermia and I, slowly and clearly. Refusing an order.
Jen Shinnen's amusement, her willingness, even eagerness, to speak to the Lord of the Roch, it fell into a pattern for my listening segment. Someone very high up had made those guns available, had known how to cut off communications. No one was higher up than Anandermia and I, but it made no sense. Jen Shinnen's motivation was obvious, but how could the Lord of the Roch possibly profit by it? Lieutenant On was likely having the same thoughts. I could read her distress in the tension of her jaw, the stiff set of her shoulders. Still, it seemed unreal, because the external signs were all I could see. I won't refuse an order, my lord, she said after 5 seconds. May I protest it?
I believe you already have, said Anandermia and I coldly. Now shoot them.
Lieutenant On turned,
I thought she was the slightest bit shaky as she walked toward the surrounded Tan Mind.
"Justice of Turin," Mianai said, and the segment of me that had been about to follow Lieutenant On stopped. "When was the last time I visited you?"
I remembered the last time the Lord of the Roch had boarded Justice of Turin very clearly. It had been an unusual visit, unannounced. Four older bodies with no entourage. She had mostly stayed in her quarters talking to me. Justice of Turin me, not One-Esk me. But she had asked One-Esk to sing for her. I had obliged with a Valskayan piece. It had been 94 years, 2 months, 2 weeks, and 6 days before, shortly after the annexation of Valskai. I opened my mouth to say so, but instead heard myself say, 203 years, 4 months, 1 week, and 1 day ago, my lord.
Hmm, said Anandermianai, but she said nothing else.
Lieutenant On approached me, where I ringed the Tan Mind. She stood there, behind a segment, for 3.5 seconds, saying nothing. Her distress must have been obvious to more than just me. Jen Shinnen, seeing her stand there silent and unhappy, smiled, almost triumphantly.
Well?
One-Esk, Lieutenant On said, clearly dreading the finish of her sentence. Jen Shinnen's smile grew slightly larger, expecting Lieutenant On to send the Tan Mind home, no doubt. Expecting, in the fullness of time, Lieutenant On's dismissal and the decline of the lower city's influence. I didn't want this, Lieutenant On said to her quietly. But I have a direct order. She raised her voice. One-Esk, shoot them. Jen Shinnen's smile disappeared, replaced by horror and, I thought, betrayal, and she looked, plainly, directly, toward Anandermianai, who stood impassive. The other Tan Mind clamored, crying out in fear and protest. All my segments hesitated. The order made no sense. Whatever they had done, these were citizens, and I had them under control. But Lieutenant On said, loud and harsh, "Fire!" And I did. Within 3 seconds, all the Tan Mind were dead. No one in the temple at that moment was young enough to be surprised at what had happened, though perhaps the several years since I'd executed anyone had lent the memories some distance, maybe even engendered some confidence that citizenship meant an end to such things. The junior priests stood where they had since this had begun, not moving, saying nothing. The head priest wept openly, soundlessly.
I think, said Anandermianai into the vast silence that surrounded us, once the echoes of gunfire had died down. There won't be any more trouble from the Tan Mind here.
Lieutenant On's mouth and throat twitched slightly, as though she were about to speak, but she didn't. Instead, she walked forward around the bodies, tapping four of my segments on the shoulder as she passed, and gesturing to them to follow. I realized she simply couldn't bring herself to speak. Or perhaps she feared what would come out of her mouth if she attempted it. Having only visual data from her was frustrating.
Where are you going, Lieutenant? Asked the Lord of the Roch.
Her back to me and I, Lieutenant On opened her mouth and then closed it again. Closed her eyes, took a breath. With my lord's permission, I intend to discover whatever it is that's blocking communications. Anandermianai didn't answer, and Lieutenant On turned to my nearest segment. Jen Shinnen's house, that segment said, since it was clear Lieutenant On was still in emotional distress. I'll look for the young person as well. Just before sunrise, I found the device there. The instant I disabled it, I was myself again. -1 missing segment. I saw the silent, barely twilit streets of the upper and lower city, the temple empty of anyone but myself, and 83 silent, staring corpses. Lieutenant On's grief and distress and shame were suddenly clear and visible to my combined relief and discomfort. And with a moment's willing it, the tracker signals of all the people in Oars flared into life in my vision, including the people who had died and still lay in the Temple of Ikt. My missing segment in an upper city street, neck broken, and Jen Shinnan's niece, in the mud at the bottom of the northern edge of the Four Temple Water. Chapter 9. Striegen came out of the infirmary, undercoat bloody, and the girl and her mother, who had been talking quietly in a language I didn't understand, fell silent and looked expectantly to her. "I've done what I can," Striegen said with no preamble. "He's out of danger. You'll need to take him to Therid to have the limbs regrown, but I've done some of the prep work, and they should grow back fairly easily."
2 weeks, said the Nilter woman, impassive, as though it wasn't the first time something like this had happened.
"Can't be helped," said Striegen, answering something I hadn't heard or understood. "Maybe someone's got a few extra hands they can spare."
"I'll call some cousins."
"You do that," said Striegen. "You can see him now, if you like, but he's asleep."
"When can we move him?"
the woman asked. "Now, if you like," answered Striegen. "The sooner the better, I suppose."
The woman made an affirmative gesture, and she and the girl rose and went into the infirmary without another word. Not long after, we brought the injured person out to the girl's flyer and saw them off, and trudged back into the house and shed our outer coats. Savardin had by now returned to her pallet on the floor and sat, knees drawn up, arms tight around her legs, as if she were holding them back and it took work. Striegen looked at me, an odd expression on her face, one I couldn't read.
"She's a good kid."
"Yes."
"She'll get a good name out of this, a good story to go with it."
I had learned the lingua franca that I thought would be most useful here, and done the sort of cursory research one needs to navigate unfamiliar places. But I knew almost nothing about the people who herded Bove on this part of the planet.
"Is it an adulthood thing?" I guessed.
"Sort of, yes."
She went to a cabinet, pulled out a cup and a bowl. Her movements were quick and steady, but I got somehow an impression of exhaustion. From the set of her shoulders, perhaps.
"I didn't think you'd be much interested in children. Aside from killing them, I mean."
I refused the bait. She let me know she wasn't a child, even if she did have a tick-tick set. Striegen sat at her small table.
"You played 2 hours straight."
"There wasn't much else to do." Striegen laughed, short and bitter. Then she gestured toward Savardin, who seemed to be ignoring us. She couldn't understand us anyway. We weren't speaking Radchai.
"I don't feel sorry for him. It's just that I'm a doctor."
"You said that."
"I don't think you feel sorry for him either."
"I don't."
"You don't make anything easy, do you?"
Striegen's voice was half angry, exasperated.
"It depends."
She shook her head slightly, as though she hadn't heard quite clearly.
"I've seen worse, but he needs medical attention."
"You don't intend to give it,"
I said, not asking.
"I'm still figuring you out," Striegen said, as though her statement was related to mine,
though I was sure it wasn't.
"As a matter of fact, I'm considering giving him something more to keep him calm."
I didn't answer.
"You disapprove?"
It wasn't a question.
"I don't feel sorry for him."
"You keep saying that."
"He lost his ship."
Very likely, her interest in her Garcetti artifacts had led her to learn what she could about the events that had led to the destruction of the Garced.
Bad enough, Stregan continued, but Rodchai ships aren't just ships, are they? And his crew. It was 1,000 years ago for us, but for him. One moment everything is the way it should be, next moment everything's gone.
With one hand she made a frustrated, ambivalent gesture. He needs medical attention. If he hadn't fled the Roch, he'd have received it.
Stregan cocked one gray eyebrow, sat on a bench. Translate for me, my Rodchai isn't good enough.
One moment an ancillary had shoved Savard in into a suspension pod. Next, she'd found herself freezing and choking as the pod's fluids exited through her mouth and nose, drained away, and she found herself in the sick bay of a patrol ship. When Savardin described it, I could see her agitation, her anger barely masked.
Some dingy little mercy with a shabby provincial captain.
Your face is almost perfectly impassive, Stregan said to me. Not in Rodchai, so Savardin didn't understand. But I can see your temperature and heart rate.
And probably a few other things, with the medical implants she likely had. The ship was human-crewed, I said to Savardin. That distressed her further. Whether it was anger or embarrassment or something else, I couldn't tell.
I didn't realize, not right away. The captain took me aside and explained.
I translated this for Stregan, and she looked at Savardin in disbelief, and then at me with speculation.
Is that an easy mistake to make?
No, I answered shortly.
That was when she finally had to tell me how long it had been, Savardin said, unaware of anything but her own story.
And what had happened after? Suggested Stregan.
I translated, but Savardin ignored it and continued as though neither of us had spoken.
Eventually, we put into this tiny border station. You know the sort of thing, a station administrator who's either in disgrace or a jumped-up nobody, an officious inspector supervisor playing tyrant on the docks, and half a dozen security whose biggest challenge is chasing chickens out of the tea shop. I'd thought the Mercy captain had a terrible accent, but I couldn't understand anyone on the station at all. The station AI had to translate for me, but my implants didn't work, too antiquated. So I could only talk to it using wall consoles,
which would have made it extremely difficult to hold any sort of conversation.
And even when station explained, the things people were saying didn't make sense. They assigned me an apartment, a room with a cot, hardly large enough to stand up in. Yes, they knew who I said I was, but they had no record of my financial data, and it would be weeks before it could possibly arrive, maybe longer. Meantime, I got the food and shelter any Rodchai was guaranteed. Unless, of course, I wanted to retake the aptitudes so I could get a new assignment. Because they didn't have my aptitudes data, and even if they did, it was certainly out of date.
Out of date, she repeated, her voice bitter. Did you see a doctor? Stregan asked.
Watching Savardin's face, I guessed what had finally sent her from Rodchai space. She must have seen a doctor who had opted to wait and watch. Physical injuries weren't an issue. The medic of whatever Mercy had picked her up would have taken care of those. But psychological or emotional ones, they might resolve on their own, and if they didn't, the doctor would need that aptitudes data to work effectively.
They said I could send a message to my house lord asking for assistance, but they didn't know who that was.
Obviously, Savardin had no intention of talking about the station doctor.
House lord? Asked Stregan.
Head of her extended family, I explained. It sounds very elevated in translation, but it isn't, unless your house is very wealthy or prestigious. And hers?
Was both.
Stregan didn't miss that. Was.
Savardin continued as though we hadn't spoken.
But it turned out, Vendai was gone. My whole house didn't even exist anymore. Everything, assets and contracts, everything absorbed by Gare.
It had surprised everyone at the time, some 500 years ago. The two houses, Gare and Vendai, had hated each other. Gare's houselord had taken malicious advantage of Vendai's gambling debts and some foolish contracts.
Catch up with current events? I asked Savardin.
She ignored my question.
Everything was gone. And what was left, it was like it was almost right. But the colors were wrong, or everything was turned slightly to the left of where it should be. People would say things and I couldn't understand them at all. Or I knew they were real words, but my mind couldn't take them in. Nothing seemed real.
Maybe it had been an answer to my question after all. How did you feel about the human soldiers?
Savardin frowned and looked directly at me for the first time since she'd awoken.
I regretted asking the question. It hadn't really been the question I'd wanted to ask.
What did you think when you heard about Ime?
But maybe she hadn't, or if she had, it might have been incomprehensible to her. Did anyone come to you whispering about restoring the rightful order of things?
Probably not, considering.
How did you leave the Roch without permits?
That couldn't have been easy. It would at the very least have cost money she wouldn't have had.
Savardin looked away from me, down and to the left. She wasn't going to say.
Everything was wrong, she said after 9 seconds of silence.
Bad dreams, said Stregan. Anxiety, shaking sometimes.
Unsteady, I said.
Translated, it had very little sting. But in Rodchai, for an officer like Savardin, it said more.
Weak, fearful, inadequate to the demands of her position.
Fragile.
If Savardin was unsteady, she had never really deserved her assignment, never really been suited to the military, let alone to captain a ship. But of course Savardin had taken the aptitudes, and the aptitudes had said she was what her house had always assumed she would be. Steady, fit to command and conquer. Not prone to doubts or irrational fears.
You don't know what you're talking about, Savardin half sneered, half snarled. Arms still locked around her knees.
No one in my house is unsteady.
Of course, I thought but didn't say. The various cousins, who had served a year or so during this annexation or that, and retired to take ascetic vows, or paint tea sets, hadn't done so because they had been unsteady. And the cousins, who hadn't tested as anticipated, but surprised their parents with assignments in the minor priesthoods or the arts. This hadn't indicated any sort of unsteadiness inherent in the house. No, never. And Savardin wasn't the least bit afraid or worried about what new assignment a retake of the aptitudes would get her, and what that might say about her steadiness.
Of course not.
Unsteady? Asked Stregan, understanding the word but not its context.
The unsteady, I explained, lack a certain strength of character.
Character? Stregan's indignation was plain to read.
Of course. I didn't alter my facial expression, but kept it bland and pleasant, as it had been for most of the past few days. Lesser citizens break down in the face of enormous difficulties or stress, and sometimes require medical attention for it. But some citizens are bred better. They never break down. Though they may take early retirement, or spend a few years pursuing artistic or spiritual interests, prolonged meditation retreats are quite popular. This is how one knows the difference between highly placed families and lesser ones.
But you Rodchai are so good at brainwashing. Or so I hear.
Re-education, I corrected. If she'd stayed, she'd have gotten help.
But she couldn't face needing the help to begin with.
I said nothing to agree or disagree, though I thought Striegen was right.
How much can re-education do?
A great deal, I said, though much of what you've probably heard is greatly exaggerated. It can't turn you into someone you're not, not in any useful way.
Erase memories.
Suppress them, I think. Add new ones, maybe. You have to know what you're doing, or you could damage someone badly.
No doubt.
Savardin stared, frowning at us, watching us talk, unable to understand what we were saying. Striegen half-smiled.
You aren't a product of re-education.
No, I acknowledged.
It was surgery. Sever a few connections, make a few new ones, install some implants.
She paused a moment, waiting for me to answer, but I didn't.
You pass well enough, mostly. Your expression, your tone of voice, it's always right. But it's always, always studied, always a performance.
You think you've solved the puzzle, I guessed.
Solved isn't the right word. But you're a corpse soldier, I'm certain of it. Do you remember anything?
Many things, I said, still bland.
No, I mean from before.
It took me nearly 5 seconds to understand what she meant. That person is dead. Savardin suddenly, convulsively, stood and walked out the inner door and, by the sound of it, through the outer as well. Striegen watched her go, gave a quick breathy hmm, and then turned back to me.
Your sense of who you are has a neurological basis. One small change and you don't believe you exist anymore, but you're still there.
I think you're still there.
Why the bizarre desire to kill Anander Mianai? Why else would you be so angry with him?
She tilted her head to indicate the exit. Savardin outside in the cold with only one coat. He'll take the crawler, I warned. The girl and her mother had taken the flyer and left the crawler outside Striegen's house.
No, he won't. I disabled it.
I gestured my approval, and Striegen continued, returning to her previous subject.
And the music. I don't suppose you were a singer, not with a voice like yours. But you must have been a musician before, or loved music.
I considered making the bitter laugh Striegen's guess called for. No, I said instead, not actually.
But you are a corpse soldier, I'm right about that.
I didn't answer.
You escaped somehow, or...
Are you from his ship? Captain Savardin's? Sword of Naphtas was destroyed. I had been there, been nearby, relatively speaking, seen it happen nearly enough. And that was 1,000 years ago.
Striegen looked toward the door, back at me. Then she frowned.
No, I think you're gownish. And they were only annexed a few centuries ago, weren't they? I shouldn't have forgotten that. It's why you're passing as someone from the Gerentate, isn't it?
No, you escaped somehow.
I can bring you back. I'm sure I can. You can kill me, you mean. You can destroy my sense of self and replace it with one you approve of.
Striegen didn't like hearing that, I could see.
The outer door opened, and then Savardin came shivering through the inner. Put on your outer coat next time, I told her.
Fuck off.
She grabbed a blanket off her pallet and wrapped it around her shoulders and stood, still shivering. Very unbecoming language, citizen, I said. For a moment she looked as though she might lose her temper. Then she seemed to remember what might happen if she did.
Fuck,
She sat on the nearest bench heavily. Off.
Why didn't you leave him where you found him? Asked Striegen.
I wish I knew. It was another puzzle for her, but not one I had made deliberately. I didn't know myself. Didn't know why I cared if Savardin froze to death in the storm-swept snow. Didn't know why I had brought her with me. Didn't know why I cared if she took someone else's crawler and fled, or walked off into the green-stained frozen waste and died.
And why are you so angry with him?
That I knew. And truth to tell, it wasn't entirely fair to Savardin that I was angry. Still, the facts remained what they were, and my anger as well.
Why do you want to kill Anander Mianai?
Savardin's head turned slightly, her attention hooked by the familiar name. It's personal.
Personal?
Striegen's tone was incredulous.
Yes. You're not a person anymore. You've said as much to me. You're equipment, an appendage to a ship's AI.
I said nothing and waited for her to consider her own words.
Is there a ship that's lost its mind? Recently, I mean?
Insane Rajshai ships were a staple of melodrama, inside and outside Rajshai space. Though Rajshai entertainments in that direction were usually historicals. When Anander Mianai had taken control of the core of Rach space, some few ships had destroyed themselves upon the death or captivity of their captains, and rumor said some others still wandered space in the 3,000 years since, half-mad, despairing. None I know of. She very likely followed news from the Rach. It was a matter of her own safety, considering what I was sure she was hiding, and what the consequences would be for her if Anander Mianai ever discovered that. She had, potentially, all the information she needed to identify me. But after half a minute, she gestured doubtfully, disappointed.
You won't just tell me?
I smiled, calm and pleasant. What fun would that be? She laughed, seemingly truly amused at my answer, which I thought a hopeful sign.
So when are you leaving?
When you give me the gun.
I don't know what you're talking about.
A lie. Manifestly a lie. Your apartment on Drasania Station, it's untouched. Just as you left it, so far as I could tell. Every one of Striegen's motions became deliberate, just slightly slowed. Blinks. Breaths. The hand carefully brushing dust from her coat sleeve.
That a fact?
It cost me a great deal to get in.
Where did a corpse soldier get all that money, anyway?
Striegen asked, still tense, still concealing it, but genuinely curious, always that.
Work, I said. Lucrative work.
And dangerous. I had risked my life to get that money.
The icon?
Not unrelated, but I didn't want to talk about that.
What do I need to do to convince you? Is the money insufficient?
I had more elsewhere, but saying so would be foolish.
What did you see in my apartment? Striegen asked, curiosity and anger in her voice.
A puzzle, with pieces missing. I had deduced the existence and nature of those pieces correctly. I must have, because here I was, and here was Aerolesperus Striegen. Striegen laughed again.
Like you. Listen.
She leaned forward, hands on her thighs.
You can't kill Anander Mianai. I wish to all that's good it were possible, but it's not. Even if I had what you think I have, you couldn't do it. You told me that 25 of these guns were insufficient.
24, I corrected. She waved that away.
Were insufficient to keep the Rajshai away from Garsed. Why do you think one would be anything more than a minor irritant?
She knew better or she wouldn't have run. Wouldn't have asked the local toughs to take care of me before I got to her.
And why are you so determined to do such a ridiculous thing? Everyone outside the Roch hates Anander Mianai. If by some miracle he died, the celebrations would last 100 years. But it won't happen. It certainly won't happen because of one idiot with a gun. I'm sure you know that. You probably know it far better than I could.
True.
Then why?
Information is power. Information is security. Plans made with imperfect information are fatally flawed, will fail or succeed on the toss of a coin. I had known when I first knew I would have to find Striegen and obtain the gun from her that this would be such a moment. If I answered Striegen's question, if I answered it fully, as she would certainly demand, I would be giving her something she could use against me, a weapon. She would almost certainly hurt herself in the process, but that wasn't always much of a deterrent, I knew. Sometimes, I began and then corrected myself. Quite frequently, someone will learn a little bit about Rodchai religion and ask, if everything that happens is the will of Ahmat, if nothing can happen that isn't already designed by God, why bother to do anything?
Good question.
Not particularly.
No? Why bother, then?
I am, I said, as Anander Mianai made me. Anander Mianai is as she was made. We will both of us do the things we are made to do, the things that are before us to do.
I doubt very much that Anander Mianai made you so that you would kill him.
Any reply would reveal more than I wished at that moment.
And I, continued Striegen, after a second and a half of silence, am made to demand answers. It's just God's will.
She made a gesture with her left hand. Not my problem. You admit you have the gun.
I admit nothing.
I was left with blind chance, a step into unguessable dark, waiting to live or die on the results of the toss, not knowing what the chances were of any result. My only other choice would be to give up. And how could I give up now? After so long, after so much. And I had risked as much or more before now and gotten this far. She had to have the gun, had to. But how could I make her give it to me? What would make her choose to give it to me?
Tell me, Striegen said, watching me intently,
no doubt seeing my frustration and doubt through her medical implants, fluctuations of my blood pressure and temperature and respiration.
Tell me why.
I closed my eyes, felt the disorientation of not being able to see through other eyes that I knew I had once had, opened them again, took a breath to begin, and told her. Chapter 10. I had thought that perhaps the morning's temple attendants would, quite understandably, choose to stay home. But one small flower bearer, awake before the adults in her household, arrived with a handful of pink-petaled weeds and stopped at the edge of the house, startled to see Anander Mianai kneeling in front of our small icon of Ahmat. Lieutenant On was dressing on the upper floor. I can't serve today, she said to me, her voice impassive as her emotions weren't. The morning was already warm and she was sweating. You didn't touch any of the bodies, I said as I adjusted her jacket collar, sure of the fact. It was the wrong thing to say. Four of my segments, two on the northern edge of the Fore Temple and two standing waist-deep in the lukewarm water and mud, lifted the body of Gentah's niece onto the ledge,
and carried her to the medic's house. On the ground floor of Lieutenant On's house, I said to the frightened, frozen flower bearer, "It's all right." There was no sign of the water bearer, and I was ineligible.